Hey, I wanted to jump in here and let you know that we have an introductory pricing going on right now up until May 18th. And what this is I have taken my courses and combined them all into a Move Better bundle. So you're going to be working on your feet, you're going to be working on your posture, and you're going to be working on your core, pelvic floor, all of those things. And you can save big right now. I am selling this for 50% off. So head to movingthroughmidlife.com, click on the Work With Me link. It is the Moving Through Midlife program, your Move Better bundle, where you can start working on feeling better in your body. You also then get access to workouts, recipe guides, live sessions with me and live classes with me throughout the month. So head to movingthroughmidlife.com, click on the Move With Me link, enter intro, and that will give you 50% off. I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome to Raising Healthy Humans, a podcast created for busy moms, where you can easily find info on health and wellness for your family. Join Courtney, a health coach, movement and posture specialist, and founder of FormFit, an active and supportive community where she helps busy moms move more. Here on Raising Healthy Humans podcast, she shares personal life experiences, training, knowledge, and conversations with other health and wellness experts so you can raise healthy humans.
Today, I am speaking with Anne, the author of How to Pay for College. This was a very comprehensive book to help you create a plan no matter where you are in your parenting journey to help you and your child plan and pay for college. I mention in the interview the overwhelm I felt while reading this book, and I want to make sure that I'm clear in stating that this wasn't overwhelming to read. The book wasn't overwhelming. Everything was laid out very nicely, but rather the fact that I have a senior this year and the emotional overwhelm that I was feeling as I read this book was what was occurring. So I encourage you to listen to our conversation, grab the book, and enjoy learning more from Anne, who has a wealth of knowledge to share on how to help you pay for college. Hi, Anne. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Courtney?
I'm good. It's wonderful to have you on and to be able to speak with me about a topic that I feel like no matter where you are within the motherhood journey is an important one, and that is how to pay for college for our children. And you wrote a book on this because you are a financial planner.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And can you tell me, like, what made you decide to write the book?
Yeah, it's a great question. So in addition to being a financial planner, I'm a mom of twins. And so this was something this was a topic I needed to know something about, not just professionally, but personally. I noticed over the course of my career that I was talking with a lot of two groups of people. One were young adults who were struggling with the basic building blocks of their adult financial lives, you know, buying a home, saving for retirement, in some cases, even having emergency savings, because they had taken on so much debt to pay for their college educations. And I was talking a lot with a second group of people who were parents who were struggling with how were they going to do this? You know, how were they going to pay for college? And I realized that if I could help that second group, those parents, to figure this out, that hopefully, ultimately, we'd end up with a lot less of these young adults in this situation, in the situation of overwhelming amounts of student loan debt. And so I just, you know, I realized in my practice, I was answering the same questions again and again and again. And so I started writing them down. And then one year I made a New Year's resolution that I was going to have it as a blog, because I thought, you know, if I really do want to help this larger universe of people, it needs to be more than just the people who walk in the doors of my firm. It needs to be lots and lots of people out there. And over time, the blog grew And when the pandemic came up, just sort of out of the blue, an opportunity to write a book came about. And I had, like so many other people, quite a bit of free time on my hands. And so I did it. And so How to Pay for College came out last summer and is available in bookstores everywhere now.
Awesome. Thank you so much for writing this. I think it's definitely, like you said, something that people know. And as I was reading it, I realized how much I did not know about the topic. And I liked how you mentioned, I've had someone on previously where they were talking about the different things that you could do if you decided you didn't want to go to college. But I thought some of the interesting information that you started off with is why college might be a great idea for people. And you speak about how people with college degrees consistently score higher in life satisfaction and happiness surveys. They also are more likely to marry, less likely to divorce. And then college graduates even live longer and have healthier lives. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's one of those things, these are all things you want for your child. Right. And I think there's so much noise out there that college isn't affordable, that we stop thinking about why we want our kids to go to college and start thinking about this just isn't possible. So let's come up with plan B. And the good news is you can find a good college path at any price point. So for example, my son, who just graduated from college last week, has a friend who went to college for free. She's not a football player, but you know, she did free community college for her first 2 years because her state offered free community college. And then she got a job at Starbucks, and Starbucks has a partnership with Arizona State with their online program. And she finished her degree for free at Arizona State. There are lots of companies that do that, not just Starbucks. So free is a starting point for what college costs. And there are definitely options available at every price point. You know, for us as parents, the really important thing to think of is, what is the pathway I want to make available for my child? And how do I solve for that pathway? Because even if, you know, free community college and free online college isn't your first choice of how to get your child a college education, it is an opportunity for you to get an education. But there are loads and loads of other pathways too.
Right. And you mentioned as well in the book how not to get stuck on just this one thought. A lot of us who have alma maters, we're very gung-ho with whatever that college is. And it doesn't mean that our child needs to take that same path. And like you mentioned, many of these, you know, once you have the degree, it really doesn't matter unless there are a few. But it doesn't matter which college you went to.
Right. And I would say my family's very representative of that. So I have twins who are graduating from college this year. One went to a single digit acceptance rate private college, and one went to a public school that admits more than 3/4 of applicants. Now they have different degrees. One is computer science, and the other is finance. But coming out of college, they have, you know, but for their specific field, almost identical job offers. You know, they're both working for Fortune 500 companies. Oh, wow. In their respective fields, in one of those management training programs where their first few years, they rotate through various departments in the company and then kind of pick a pathway. And they have the same starting salary.
Okay.
Now, they could end up doing vastly different things over the course of their careers. But there are so many tools out there that have really democratized, for example, the job search process, where every student has access to Handshake, which is the primary recruiting tool for college students. You know, we joke that there's, you know, my husband and I talk that there's sort of the push system and the pull system. And so my daughter, who's at a private college, gets all this stuff pushed onto her. My son, who's at a public college, kind of needed to go out and pull it out himself. Uh-huh. But they, you know, they definitely had access to very similar resources.
Okay. Do you when you speak about financial planning and how we need to start working on saving up for college, you had mentioned there's, you know, free, and then there's up to, I mean, I believe 360,000, I think was a number that, yeah, I mean, it, yeah. And yeah, upwards, I mean, depending on masters and
list price is $90,000 a year. Now there's no reason for anyone to pay that.
That's insane.
And I will say, just because people get stuck on these list prices, my daughter attends Earth's most expensive college. She applied, well, she was accepted to six different colleges, and it was her second cheapest choice because tuition is very heavily discounted off of list prices. And in fact, the net price of college, which is the price that people actually pay, the net tuition has not gone up in about 20 years. The average tuition discount last year was 56%, which means that for every $1,000 of tuition that's charged, only 440 actually gets paid. That does not mean that you will receive a 56% discount at every college, but that does mean that there are colleges out there that will provide generous scholarships to your student.
Okay. And I believe this is where we get into FAFSA. Is that
so? Yeah, so we can talk about FAFSA, but there's basically, when it comes to scholarships, there are three types of scholarships. There are need-based institutional scholarships, and those are awarded through the FAFSA and the CSS profile, which are the two big financial aid forms. There are merit-based scholarships, and those are scholarships that are there to attract the types of students that the college wants to enroll. Most people think of them as athletic scholarships, but in fact, mathletes are the ones who kill it on the merit scholarships. The vast majority of merit scholarships are for students with good grades and test scores.
Okay.
And then there's a third pool of scholarships, which are outside scholarships. And those are scholarships that are offered by any entity other than the college itself. And so my daughter, for example, who's at a private college, has all three kinds of scholarships. She has institutional need-based scholarships. She has an institutional merit scholarship, and she has an outside scholarship.
Okay. So questions for you. If we're looking into these scholarships, we need to do a few things. So I know, let's put FAFSA aside, because that probably is kind of my eyes glazed over.
Right.
As I was reading that portion, I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. So we'll get there, because that definitely has a specific thing that you need to do. Merit scholarships. We know more like you mentioned, the sports scholarships. There's academic scholarships. Is this something that they are speaking to their high school guidance counselor? Is that when they should start looking into those types of scholarships?
So high school counselors, I think, are especially helpful in finding outside scholarships. And so I always recommend that families start, or students start, at their high school, college, and career center when it comes to looking for outside scholarships. So those are ones that are offered by, you know, Rotary or other local organizations. My daughter found one through her high school. My daughter's scholarship was the one she found through her high school computer science teacher.
Oh, okay.
The scholarships that you'll find in your college and career center, many of them will be local ones too, where there's a very small pool of applicants, because there are big websites like FastWeb and Scholly and whatnot that have huge databases of scholarships. The problem is they have huge pools of people applying for those scholarships.
Right.
The best way to find institutional scholarships, so there's two great starting points.
Okay.
One is, we tend to think of merit scholarships as coming from private colleges, but in fact, most public colleges are very generous about them. So I always encourage parents in late middle school or early high school, if you're not yet there, to look up your state's public colleges merit scholarships, you know, because these tend to be awarded automatically, and they tend to be based on specific criteria. So if you have such and such GPA, and in some cases, a corresponding test score, then you will automatically get $5,000 a year, $10,000 a year, whatever, you know, whatever number is. It's really helpful to know that early in your high school career, so that you know what you're targeting.
Okay. Because, well, and that's why I was thinking merit scholarships were something within the guidance counselor, because of like our Bright Futures scholarships here, and that you kind of have to take us. I mean, yes, it's based on grades and stuff, but there's also a path that you're kind of going down to be able to get that as well.
Yeah. And your high school counselor will also know things like, they will tend to know what your in-state scholarship packages look like. Now, if you're interested in private colleges, there's a couple ways to do it. If you have specific colleges you're interested in, one thing is to just Google the college name and incoming freshman scholarships, and you will see a list of scholarships that are available there. The other thing to do is every college is required to have a tool on its website called a net price calculator. And that calculator, you can input your information. It's always financial information, sometimes academic information, and it will tell you what types of scholarships or how much in scholarships students like you are receiving in the current year. These are non-binding estimates, and they're only estimates, but I will say our experience with my daughter when she was applying to private colleges is that every award she got was within $2,000 of what the net price calculator had said. Oh, I think net price calculators are a great tool to rule some schools out. So, you know, we said, this is our college budget. We did the net price calculator. If there was no path for the school to come in within that budget, we didn't apply. Super easy.
Okay.
There's also a great website for just kind of getting your arms around all of this is College Data, and it's just collegedata.com. You can go in there and type in a college name, and with the information that comes back, there's a tab called Financials on it. And if you click on the Financials tab, it will tell you whether the college offers need-based scholarships, what percent of need they meet. So you could be eligible for need-based scholarships, but the college might not care, or they might not offer scholarships to meet the full amount of your need. And it also says for students who weren't eligible for need, what percentage of them got a merit scholarship.
Okay. Okay.
So a baseline to say, yep, this college offers merit scholarships. We're probably only eligible for merit scholarships, so this is someplace we should apply, or this one doesn't, not going to pay $85,000 a year. Cross it off the list.
Okay. And then when you mentioned that your daughter with the Starbucks, like, is that just something she kind of fell into, or did she have knowledge of that prior to?
Oh, so this is my son's friend who went to college for free.
Okay.
Yeah, that was, you know, she was doing community college and working at Starbucks, and then found out that Starbucks had this program and was like, that's perfect. I can finish my degree for free.
Okay.
And I think these programs are becoming more common. There are a number of companies that offer them. So it's not just working for Starbucks. And a lot of companies, even if they don't have a full tuition partnership program like that, will offer to, you know, they will reimburse, you know, $1,000 a year of college tuition expenses. I know my son worked at Chipotle, and a few of his friends did that. You know, it was an extra $1,000 a year free.
That can help. Yeah, definitely.
Except for they had to work a certain number of hours every year and have to be there for a certain amount of time.
Okay. Now, with circling back to FAFSA, is that how you say it, FAFSA?
Yep.
Lots of confusion around that. But what I'm understanding is that October 1st is when basically doors open. You need to then go in and apply if your child is a junior.
Senior.
Senior. So, okay. Once it's a senior, but it's based on sophomore.
Correct. Senior. So the FAFSA is you will file it senior year of high school.
Okay.
In every year except 2023, it comes out on October 1st. This year, because there are all these big changes coming due to FAFSA simplification, the Department of Education announced recently that this year's FAFSA will come out in December.
Oh, okay. Well, good to know, because I have a senior this year.
Yeah, so you will be affected by this change. The good news is the reason it's delayed is they're simplifying it pretty dramatically. So so it will be a far lesser headache to complete than it
has. No matter what the plan is for every individual, you should make sure that you do this, correct?
Correct. That is always my advice. Even if you think you're not eligible for financial aid, there are numerous good reasons to file the FAFSA. So number one, you will not get any financial aid if you don't file it, period. So if you would like to be considered for financial aid, you need to file it. Many colleges require a second form called the CSS profile, but let's just set that aside for now.
Okay.
The other thing that the FAFSA gives you access to is federal student loans. So if you want to be able to take out a federal student loan, you must file the FAFSA. Now, even if you think you are not going to borrow for college, or even if you think you are not going to borrow for college this year, I still recommend that you file the FAFSA. Something like 40% of families think they're going to borrow for college, and 75% of students graduate with student loans. So you may think you're not going to take out student loans, but you might. College often costs more than you think it's going to cost, because, and I think part of that is that families look at, okay, tuition fees, books, room and board, that's it. They don't stop and think about, it's a big campus and I want my student to participate in the Greek system, or we're going to go to parents' weekend and that's airfare, rental car, two nights in a hotel, or, you know, all the other things that come up. My kid needs a car while they're there. So lots of other things can come up. And so, you know, you may need that as a student loan. I also think a student loan is a good parenting tool, even if you do not intend for your child to take out student loans. Even if you feel very strongly about your student not taking out student loans, you may have your own requirements for you to support them through college. You know, maybe it's that they pursue a major that could lead to a job versus one that might not. And you know, in my case, we have a friend, one of my kid's best friends had an older brother, and he came home after freshman year of college, and he's like, I'm not getting a tattoo while I'm in college. And we're like, where did that come from? He's like, I keep talking to friends who regret their tattoos already. And so I thought, you know what? Transitional phases of life are good times not to make permanent decisions. So I told my kids, no tattoos while you're in college. And, you know, my son is now eligible if he wants. My daughter will be in 2 weeks. But whatever, you know, whatever your sort of parenting guardrails on their education are, the direct student loan can be a great tool, because you really don't want to pull the rug out from under them as a student. But you might say, well, guess what? Here's your contribution going forward.
Well, and for me, this was something my parents had me do. I had to fill out a loan or apply for a student loan. And it was not a very large one. I think it was $4,000 or $5,000, very minor, but it helped like with books, school, room and board, that type of thing. And it then instilled in me like having to pay on time. And like, there were different things that I mm-hmm. had to work through as well, getting a job to help pay for this student loan, that type of thing. So I feel like it kind of set me up for life as well.
Yeah.
Not just my parents are going to pay for everything.
Yeah. And I do think the federal direct student loan is a really good guardrail for borrowing. You know, a student who takes that out every year will graduate owing, you know, depending on interest rates, somewhere between $28,000 and $30,000. That translates to a monthly payment of about $325 for 10 years. Absolutely supported by the additional earnings that college graduates make. So that is a perfectly reasonable amount to borrow. I would also say for families who think they're going to borrow for college, even if the parents don't want the student borrowing, the direct student loan is still the best loan to take out. Anyone can pay it off. Anyone who wants to can make the payments, but the student is ultimately the one responsible for it. It has the lowest interest rates, you know, fixed rates over their lifetime, all the federal student loan protections, you know, income-based repayment plans, public service loan forgiveness eligibility, and so on and so forth. So even if you're thinking that your student isn't the one who should borrow, your student is the one who should borrow, and you can sort it out amongst yourselves who takes responsibility for it. But yeah, but I think we talk so much about student loans being a one-way ticket to the poorhouse. And mm-hmm. for many students, taking out the student loan is the difference between going to college and not going to college. And it is the federal direct student loan is a perfectly reasonable investment in your education.
Okay, perfect. I want to also talk about the 529s,
yes.
just because there's many moms and listeners who don't have seniors. So let's talk about 529s. Obviously, getting started as soon as possible is the best thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing about savings for anything is the earlier you start, the more work your money does. The later you start, the more work you do.
Okay.
And if you save rather than borrow, saving, you earn the interest. Borrowing, you pay the interest. But let's talk first about what a 529 is, just for those who don't know. 529s are tax-advantaged college savings accounts. They are run by the states. So I think every state but one offers their own 529. Any 529 can be used at any college where you can take out a direct student loan. It can also be used for apprenticeship programs. There are a lot of international schools you can use it at. So there are loads and loads of ways to use a 529. I always hear from people, well, I'm not sure if my kid's going to go to school in this state. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
You can use any 529 at any college. If you are unsure which 529 to use, just use your state's plan. That's the easy answer. But so there are a couple of tax benefits to 529s. First, you have all your growth in the account is tax-free.
Okay.
So if you put in $10,000 and later it's worth $20,000, that $10,000 is tax-free to you. In addition, all of the dividends and capital gains and trading that the 529 makes to keep your asset allocation appropriate for how far you are from college is also tax-free. When you take the money out, as long as you use it for qualified higher education expenses, which is tuition fees, room and board, on campus or off, books and supplies, a computer, internet access, a wide range of things, then those distributions are also tax-free. In addition, many states offer a tax benefit for your contributions. And so if you are late to the college savings game, getting that state tax benefit can increase your savings by a lot if you can, you know, funnel that back into your 529. I think one of the best reasons to open a 529 account, even if you don't have two nickels to rub together, is... So even if you're not going to save for yourself, you know, typically the minimum amount you can put in is $20 to open an account for your child. But almost every 529 has what's called a gifting page. And a gifting page is something that you can share with grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends, you know, with holidays, birthdays, anytime like that. Hey, we don't want any more toys. Would you please contribute to our 529? And that is the beauty of 529s. As a financial advisor, I talk to loads of grandparents who are like, I would be happy to help my kids and my grandkids out financially, but I don't want to just give them money and have them go to Disneyland. I would love to help with college, or I would love to help with something specific. That's what your 529s gifting page is for.
Okay. Are there requirements that you have to put a certain amount in each year?
Nope. No, they're very, very flexible. And for the most part, they are designed to help people get started.
Gotcha.
And so the barriers are quite low.
Yeah. And not even like, what is the starting? Do they require a certain amount to begin?
Every plan is different, but typically the state-based plans have very low minimums. Here in Oregon, I want to say it's $20.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's what you were saying.
But gotcha. It's different in different states. And then there are entities like Vanguard or Charles Schwab or Fidelity have their own ones. Those tend to have much higher minimums, but you can literally start a 529 for your child for $20.
Okay.
Or perfect. Maybe less in some places. but here's the thing. What people often do is they start it, they put the $20 in, and then they never check it again. So
that's not going to grow a lot.
That's not going to grow a lot. That being said though, students who have any amount of savings for college enroll in college and graduate from college at higher rates than those who don't. And that's even with very small amounts of savings. Now, you could argue chicken and egg, right? Because if I'm saving for college, I'm probably talking about college. I'm probably encouraging you to apply to college. So I can completely understand the going to college at higher rates, but they also graduate at higher rates. And that's what we want, right? We want them not just to go, but to graduate. So saving for college increases the likelihood that your child will graduate from college.
Okay.
So do it. And ideally, you can set up a monthly contribution into your 529, because that's what really gets the flywheel going of college savings. And again, state-based programs have really low minimums. I know here in Oregon, the minimum ongoing contribution is $10. You could do $10 a month. You could do $10 a quarter. You could do $10 a year. But just getting that going will mean that your child has a whole lot more choices, because the more savings you have, the more choices you have. I know we started by talking about my son's friend who went to college for free. If you want your child to have access to a four-year on-campus experience, it is almost impossible to do that without savings. And so do get those, you know, do get that savings going. I think a really helpful strategy too is every year on your child's birthday, as you're reflecting back on what a great year it's been. And I would always joke with my kids, I'm like, four was really fun. Why don't you guys stay four for another year? And they'd be like, no, we're going to be five now. And I'm like, okay. But so, you know, so think about not just what five looks like, but what 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 25, 30 look like. And what might you do today to make that, you know, to expand the options available to them? And maybe you can increase your monthly contribution. Maybe you can make a one-time contribution from birthday gift money or from your own money. Maybe you got a bonus this year, or you're going to get a bonus, and you can plan that a chunk of it will go into your 529, because more savings gives you more choices. And I think as parents, what we really want is more choices. We want our kids to have good choices.
And question for you with the 529. So say your child decides maybe they want to go to a trade school instead of a college. Does that help with that?
You can use 529s for trade schools, for apprenticeship programs. We have a friend whose son is, he's going through an apprenticeship program to become an electrician, and he's using his 529 for that. And in fact, he's been able to use his 529 to buy tools because they're required for his program, which has been great. Awesome. The other thing is there was recently a, in the Secure Act, Secure 2.0 that passed at the end of last year, there's a provision that allows you to convert up to $35,000 of excess 529 funds to a Roth IRA.
Oh, okay.
So if you think of your 529 as a getting launched fund for your kid, if they don't go to college, they can use it to start their Roth IRA later in life. And a Roth IRA is a great tool for a young adult, not only because all that long-term tax-free growth, but because you can take your contributions back out at any point.
Right.
Now, if you if you don't use your 529 for college, for trade school, for apprenticeship programs, for community college, or for a Roth IRA, you have a couple of options. One is you change the beneficiary to another member of your family.
Okay.
You can also use it for graduate school. But you can also take it out and just pay the taxes and penalties. So I had a client a few years ago, so before you had the Roth IRA option, whose son didn't go to college, but he got a job and he needed a car for his job. And okay. So he took $6,000 out of his 529, paid the taxes and penalties. So you pay income taxes and a 10% penalty on any growth in the account if you take it out, but that's taxed to whoever gets the distribution. So he was just getting started out. So his tax rate was like zero, and he was thrilled to have money to buy a car, because not having a car payment when he didn't have much income was a huge boon to him getting started.
Yeah, most definitely. That would, I think all would enjoy that, being able to have a vehicle.
Now, one of the things with 529s, because I meet a lot of families who are like, we're saving for college. I'm like, where are you saving? They're like, we have a savings account.
Oh,
no. You want your money to grow. And okay, right now, savings accounts can pay decent returns, but as a general rule, they don't. So put your money in a 529. A lot of people go, well, I don't want to be invested in a 520. I don't know how to pick an investment choice. 529s offer age-based or target enrollment portfolios, which what they'll do is they have an asset allocation between stocks and bonds that is appropriate for your time horizon to college. And so for young kids, they're really aggressive, you know, lots and lots of stock because you've got 18 years.
Right.
But as your child ages and gets closer to college, they become more conservative and more appropriate so that you're not risking losing money. But the other thing is, if you are not at all comfortable with the stock market, there are some, number one, there are some high interest, you know, guaranteed accounts within 529s. And again, that interest is tax-free. So if you're in the 22% tax bracket and you owe state taxes, that's still, you know, that's maybe a 25% bump in your savings by having it in a tax-free account. There are also many states offer what's called prepaid tuition programs, and that's where you buy tomorrow's tuition at today's prices. So hypothetically, for the sake of easy math, let's say college tuition is $10,000 today, and you put $1,000 in, you have 1/10 of 1 year of tuition, even if it costs $20,000 when your kid's in college.
Gotcha. Okay.
And again, not tied to the stock market at all. There are a number of states who offer that. There's also an organization called the Private College 529 that has a group of member schools that offers the same, you know, for their schools, but you have to go to one of their schools.
Right. Okay. And I think that was one of the things that we had learned about ours in Florida was that. And I think that's why we chose a 529 instead. So I liked also how you mentioned in the book, getting your children involved in the process with you. Mm-hmm. If we can touch on that before.
Yes. I always say, planning for college is equal parts financial planning and parenting, because you can come up with a great plan, but if your kid isn't on board, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah.
And so you as a parent need to get ahead of them in framing their college search. And I think there are always age appropriate ways to do that. So, and this is not about, I want you to go to this preschool because this preschool sends the most people to Harvard. That is, for example, with really young kids, talk about, you know, I call them college adjacent conversations. So, you know, when my kids were little, we would, I went to Berkeley and we live in Portland now. We would go down and stay with my friend Kelly, who's a college friend, and we would go to a football game with her and her kids. And Kelly and I would talk about all the fun things we did in college, and my kids loved Kelly and knew she was a college friend. And You know, we went to a football game that was fun, and we showed him our sorority house, and we showed him, you know, the places that we would hang out. We took him out up in the bell tower, and, you know, mostly because we wanted to do it, but it instilled in them the idea that college is fun. College is interesting. You make friends there. There are things to do, and sort of planted that seed in their minds that that was something that could enrich their lives. So
right.
Talk about your college friends, talk about things you enjoyed doing. You know, there was a thunderstorm and my husband's like, I never knew where thunder and lightning came from. And then I took a meteorology class in college and learned all about, you know, all this stuff. So those are all great conversations to have with your kids when they're really little. Mm-hmm. I think once they get to middle school, two things happen. One, they have some concept of money. And two, chances are good that they have some friends with older siblings who are starting to look at college. And that's a great time to start introducing the notion that college costs money. Hmm. And that there are different ways to pay for it. It's a great time to talk to them about how much you're saving. Because if you say to a middle schooler, we are saving $100 every month for your college, that's mind-blowing.
Right, right.
Those are mind-blowing numbers. To them. And you are telling them, I care about this. I'm working hard for this. This is something that I value. Mm-hmm. And you can add to that conversation, colleges cost all different kinds of amount, you know, all different amounts. And we will have a budget available for you to go to college because it's very important to us that you go to college and that you get a degree and that you graduate either debt-free or with a minimum amount of debt because that's an important experience to you. Once they get into high school, I think having more concrete conversations about what your college budget is are really helpful. I strongly encourage you to have those conversations from the perspective of goals as opposed to constraints. So a constraint-based conversation is, we only have enough money for you to go to public school, so don't look beyond our in-state mm-hmm. public school choices. A goals-based conversation is, it's really important to us that you go to college and that you graduate debt-free or with a minimum of debt. We have saved enough, because as you know, we've been saving all along for your college. We've saved enough that you could graduate in-state debt-free. You may be able to find other college options that work within that budget, and we will absolutely support you in that process.
Right.
But have that conversation before their friends start talking about the fabulous private schools that they're going to be going to.
Yeah, so they know what's expected. Or not what's expected, but they know what you can do, and if they want more, then they've got to kind of help.
Yeah.
In some way. Yeah.
Yeah. Where can they get scholarships? Where can they fill the gap? You know, how does this all work? In my book, I have some worksheets around student loan debt. And so if you went to this college and this was your budget and this is how much extra there is, there's a worksheet that lets you calculate what that monthly student loan payment is, which I think can be eye-opening for a lot of kids. Although I will say it's hard for kids who have earned money, you know, babysitting or working after school. It can be really hard for them to think that, you know, they look out there and they go, well, average starting salary for a college graduate is $60,000. I would have no trouble paying off $100,000 worth of student loans. Yes, you would.
There's a lot more than that loan that you will be. Yes.
And all the other things that you could spend that money on that won't be available. That won't be available to you.
Yeah. Your book, I've loved it. I'm not all the way through because I'm trying to do...
Life.
I mean, it's not a long book. There are actionable things. I love how you have the worksheets at the back, or I'm sorry, after each chapter to kind of work through. And I just feel like a lot of it's, although that one chapter it was a little difficult for me to get through just because you were talking. Yeah, the fast. I was like, every time, and I read at night, so I was getting tired, and I'm like, okay, I can't.
But so helpful for information and for insomnia.
It is. No, it's just, you know, it's a lot. And for people who don't understand, that's all the other chapters were great with providing information. I mean, and even that is excellent with providing information. It's just, I guess maybe because of where I am in my stage, it was because I know it's right around the corner. So for me, I was like, okay, I got to figure this all out and I've got to do this. And but you do leave all the information out for the assets and finding your tax returns and all of that information, explaining what needs to be done so that you are ready to apply for FAFSA. And then, like I said, everything after each chapter is the worksheet that you can work through. And I just think you've done a great job with really making it understandable for us that aren't in financial planning.
I so often I read a book and I'm like, oh my gosh, there was so much good information. This is so helpful. And I set it aside and I move on to the next thing. When it comes to college planning, the window to plan is too short to set it aside and think you'll come back. You know, as a family, so much of your life is in triage mode, right? All the time. So you just need to, I wanted to make it very easy for you to take action.
And you do that.
Whatever point you are.
Yeah. And you do that. And I think that helps because as stressed as I'd start to get, I was like, I have to look at this, not just for my oldest, I can look at this for all three of them. And instead of, you know, being hard on myself for maybe not putting as much money in the 529 as we could have or should have or whatever, let's focus on where we are, which you do a great job with that, and help us move to ensure that our other children have opportunities as well.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think it's really important for parents to remember it's never too early to start planning, but it's also never too late.
Right.
And so wherever you are, there are actions you can take that will give your kids more choices.
Yes. And this provided so much information that I didn't know was out there about student loans and merit scholarships and things like that, where I am able to help my son. And then also the communication part of it, working with him through everything, because I'm not sure before this, we didn't really talk about college. You know, it was more about the fun stuff, not really thinking about how are we going to do this and how can you help?
Mm-hmm. So. And how can you have a great college experience, whatever our family's budget is.
Yes.
Because there are so many, you know, there's so many different pathways through college. And I think two things happen. You know, one is we look back to our own college experiences and use that to inform our kids' college choices. Our kids have a whole different set of choices than we do. And the other is there are a lot of different pathways that are available now. So, you know, most public schools offer dual enrollment programs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether you're in high school taking community college courses that'll transfer you to 4-year college, or oftentimes you can enroll at a 4-year college and do their dual enrollment program, do your first 2 years at a community college, often combining that with free community college if your state offers it. Mm-hmm. And still having access to all of the things that the 4-year students have, but at far lower cost.
Right. Which is a great opportunity for everyone as well.
Yeah.
Too,
we let so much of the college narrative be driven by the Stanfords and Harvards of the world, where you should just be grateful that we'll even consider your application, let alone let you in. Most colleges are actively trying to recruit and enroll students. And the way they do that is by discounting tuition to make it more affordable.
Yes. And I love that part where you speak about, was it your son, I believe, who, I'm not sure which one, where all the friends had already gotten notices and then they were they had applied at one and hadn't heard from the other. So it helped to kind of make it understandable as to what's going on with these colleges, as well as to why you may not be hearing back yet from them.
Yeah, and that was a really strange thing. So we're in Oregon, and both of my kids applied to University of Oregon. Like I said, I have twins. They're very, very different students. And my son applied early to Oregon and Arizona just because he had everything ready. And he's like, I just want to be done with this. Got his answer right away from Arizona. I mean, literally, he submitted his application on October 31st. And on November 2nd, it was like, you're a Wildcat. Here's your big scholarship. And, you know, this marketing drumbeat started. And then my daughter had also applied early to Oregon because she had to apply early to be considered for a scholarship. And my son was an okay student in high school. I think okay might be a compliment for him. He just wasn't into school. My daughter, I would call her a D1 mathlete, you know, 4.5 GPA, perfect at ACT, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And she didn't hear anything from Oregon either. I was like, I would expect like the marching band would be in front of our house the day you got her application. So I think it's really helpful to have those conversations with your kids ahead of time about how, what the parameters of your decision are. It was also really helpful for us because for Alex, my son, he really, really, really wanted to go to Arizona, not Oregon. Mm-hmm. And it looked like Arizona was a whole lot more expensive than Oregon. And we're like, you know, $28,000 extra dollars for you to have good weather while you're in college. That doesn't seem, that doesn't seem like a good choice.
Right.
And we told him, you know, if you can figure out a way to close this gap, knock yourself out. And so that was a big learning to us. For those of you who are at the point of having kids applying for college, you need to go through the offer letter with a fine tooth comb, because mm-hmm. he found out, for example, that a big part of the reason why Arizona looked more expensive than Oregon was that Arizona used their highest housing and meal plan cost and Oregon used their lowest.
Interesting.
But then he went out and found out, you know, apartment rents are cheaper in Arizona than in Oregon. And if he got a job in the dining commons, he'd get a discount on his meal plan in addition to getting paid to work there. And Arizona had a shortage of male RAs, so chances were good that he could get that job. And Owen, at Arizona, his tuition freshman year would be the same all 4 years. In Oregon, you know, college tuition typically goes up 6% a year. So even though it was more expensive now, by junior year, probably at the latest, it would be cheaper.
Oh, wow. That's great information to be able to find out from.
Yeah. So, I mean, even when you're at those very late stages of planning, there are still opportunities to plan and strategize and bring your costs down.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, I don't want to keep you any longer. Let our listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah. So my website is howtopayforcollege.com. And I've got loads and loads of resources for college planning on my website. And then my book is How to Pay for College. It's available from Amazon and bookstores everywhere.
Perfect. And then you also mentioned that you have is it a course or a membership that you can go through as well?
Yeah, I have an online course on my website. So if you want a more directed approach to college planning, it's very much targeted at families whose students are already in high school.
Okay, perfect.
And so that's on my website. Okay. And if you would add a discount code in the show notes, what would you like that discount code to be?
FormFit. Is that okay?
All right. So if you use the discount code FormFit, you'll get a 10% discount on my online course.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Thank you for coming. I've enjoyed this and learning from you. It's been a great overwhelming experience.
Well, and I don't want it to be overwhelming, and a big part of the book is to try to make it not overwhelming.
No, it's not. I'm just overwhelmed because I think it's just the senior year too is just mind-boggling to me. That's, I think, more of it. It's the emotional overwhelm that I'm dealing with at this point, not that this information was overwhelming.
Absolutely.
So. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day for this.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen to our podcast. We hope you found this information valuable and can incorporate it into your family's life. Make sure to check out our show notes for all the important links available. Come join us on Facebook at Moms Raising Healthy Humans community page. Also, please check out our wide range of memberships, family monthly focus ideas, challenges, live events, and on-demand and live workouts, meal plans, and so much more. Head to formfitonline.com. And as always, keep moving.